Hello, everyone. Welcome to Just Getting By, episode 45, for Friday, the 18th of November, 2011. I'm Craig Jones, and I'm joined, as usual, by Chemslave. Hello, Chemslave.
Howdy.
How are you doing this Friday
afternoon? TGIF. TGIF.
Yes. Yes, I'm sure we all experienced TGIF at some point or another. All right, so we have a good... series of technology stories to discuss today. And let's start off with perhaps my favorite, the end of Flash. Now, Chemslave.
It's not the end of Flash, Craig.
You're jumping ahead. You're reading my mind. Now, Flash... Describe to the audience what Flash is.
It is the rapper that sort of holds, like, if you're watching a video on YouTube or something, that wraps the video file and so you can actually view it. Or if you want to play a game, it's a little window where you sort of play a game in your browser.
Well, you're absolutely right, but it's much more than that, too. It's a whole development environment. You can build whole websites with menus and options, and it's a whole development framework. It's horrible. But it's also analogous in some ways to a coding language like, you know, C++ or... C# or Java. It's more like Java than anything else, I'd say. So it is not just for games and video. Whole websites are built on it. Famously, a restaurant or a music a band site will oftentimes have Flash sites.
And you can't use them if you have an iPhone.
Yeah, I know. Yeah, that's always been a big bugaboo. And Android, I have in my hand right now, a Nexus One Android phone. It's now been antiquated by several generations of Android devices, but it has the latest Adobe Flash program, Adobe Flash 10.1. I believe that's the latest. I don't even want to look, but it's close to that. Now, it sucks. Nothing ran well with Flash. Websites would load very slowly, very jaggedly. If you moved around, it wouldn't be smooth. It would be herky-jerky. It's not a good thing at all. It makes browsing the web terrible. Absolutely terrible. And then you get to the issue that many Flash pages, in fact all of them, are not made for touch. Flash is made based on the assumption that you will not be touching it. You will be using a mouse and a keyboard to navigate Flash sites. So it's never been good. Half the time you couldn't interact with what you're seeing anyway. The other half of the time it wouldn't load. And Apple realized that, and Steve Jobs very famously... wrote his thoughts on Flash, polemic over 1,000 words on Apple.com, saying why iOS devices would not ever support Flash. And basically, he said that Flash has never, and there's no evidence that it would ever, run smoothly on mobile architectures at all. And... you know who finally agreed with them? Adobe. Adobe finally agrees with Steve Jobs. It's a shame Steve Jobs is not alive to see that. I don't think he'd care anyway. He knew he was right, so who cares what anybody else thinks? He knew he was right. And Adobe, just this past week, announced that they would indeed end development on Flash for mobile devices. But you can't help but think that this is the beginning of the end for Flash in general. This is the death for Flash on mobile devices, which is a big, big hit to Android and a huge hit to BlackBerry Playbook. The QNX operating system that the BlackBerry Playbook and new, as yet unreleased, versions of the BlackBerry headset use, they are heavily dependent on Flash for their application development. You can use other frameworks, but Flash was one of the two or three ways to get applications onto the Playbook.
Well, sucks to be the Playbook now, doesn't it?
Well, for many reasons outside of Flash, too. But yes, this is just the final nail in the coffin for Flash. For the BlackBerry Playbook. And also, WebOS has Flash. That's WebOS is in worse shape than the BlackBerry Playbook. And Android will no longer have Flash support either. And Android really made a point of saying how they have access to the whole web, and the implication was that Apple devices did not. Instead, Adobe is pointing its developers towards HTML5, the standard that Apple has been trumpeting for years. And, in all fairness, Google has as well. So what do you think about Flash?
It's one of those things where you use it because a crap load of the internet still uses it. But it's a pain. Yeah, I'm pretty sure that it's part of the reason why a lot of times my browser is just ungodly slow. Even when I only have like one or two tabs open. If I've had the guy use Firefox, so the plug-in like layer or whatever they call it, it crashed a few times on me. And it was because I was on this unreally crappy, like, buggy Flash, like, website. I love it for the games, like, if you're playing a game online, like, in a browser, but it's a big pain.
It is. And, in fact, I don't have Flash installed on my MacBook Pro. What I do, if I need to view something that is in Flash, is I open up Chrome. Google Chrome has its own self-contained Flash plugin that is sandboxed and is not does not impact system-wide performance. And so I use Apple's Safari browser by default, and those instances that are it's not that common that I have to view something in Flash. I'll just go over to Google Chrome. So that's a big story. It's gonna really impact Android and BlackBerry, and it'll be interesting to see how that plays out. So Ice Cream Sandwich is coming out too. You know what Ice Cream Sandwich is?
Yeah, I had one for dessert today.
Oh yeah, they're delicious, aren't they?
Yes.
You know what? I know you can't stand this. And I'm getting
stand Android phones for, because they're useless, so I don't use them.
Well, that's a little bit harsh, but I know you can't stand the nicknames for these devices, and I'm starting to become, you know, just as annoyed as you are. I'm right there with you. And Ice Cream Sandwich is just terrible. At least you had Froyo, was one word. It was a combination of two, frozen yogurt. But still, Froyo was one thing. Gingerbread was one thing. Donut was one thing. Ice Cream Sandwich. Are you kidding me? What? Why? What's the point? I'm sorry, I digress.
Cutesy.
Yes. They're getting a little bit too cutesy, I'm afraid. But Engadget has posted a link to a article about, you know, whether or not you might be getting your phone will be getting Ice Cream Sandwich, and the overall takeaway from this article is it's complicated. There's only a couple of phones from each manufacturer on each carrier, or are officially confirmed to, you know, to get ice cream sandwich. But almost none of them are confirmed to not get ice cream sandwich. They don't want to get that negative publicity out there. So basically, even if you look at this this post, unless you have some very specific, aka very new phones, you won't know if you're going to be getting ice cream sandwich or not. My guess is if you have a phone that's older than 6 months, it's very unlikely that you will get it. Which is just going to contribute even more to the fragmentation issues with Android.
See, I'm starting to look at it a different way. See, Android phones are so great that they don't need to be upgraded to the newest and greatest. They're just good enough as it is.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, that's definitely the issue. The Nexus One, which is the canonical Android phone, the Google phone, the first phone that Google basically dictated everything about it, is not going to be getting ice cream sandwich. And it is not yet 2 years old. And a lot of people still view this as, like, the Android phone. If you see, like, websites that use an Android phone's image, oftentimes you'll see the Nexus One being used to show a Google phone. And it's I have one in my hand right now, and I love it. I would never use it as my only phone, but it is nice. I have to say it is nice. I like it. And I'm sure that I'm going to be able to put ice cream sandwich on it through various unofficial means. But it's a shame that Google has decided to end of life what was once its flagship phone so early. Where Apple, for instance, is still supporting phones that it released 3 years ago. It's amazing. So this is a big issue for fragmentation. And, do you have anything to say whatsoever?
No. I'll get an Android phone, because you'll be screwed if you want to get the greatest and latest.
Unfortunately, I have to agree with you. And I'm even a lot less biased about this, because I do like Android, but I can't recommend it, because you are not guaranteed to have any chance whatsoever of being able to update. All right. So, you know what? Talking about Google, they have a music event coming up on November 16th. When was November 16th? 16th was Wednesday. Yeah, we probably should have mentioned this on Wednesday, but, you know. The audience listening to this, will know more than we do. Which is unfortunate. We probably should have talked about this on Monday, now that I'll think about it. but
well,
it's rumored...
It's probably a useless piece of information anyway.
Yeah, well, I was going to get to that, because I think you're right. Google has been for 2 years now trying to open up a music store. And they've not been able to. And even now, it's rumored they only have 2 of 4 major labels supporting them. It's likely they will open without the support of 2 of the big 4 music labels. And I'd be surprised if they open with any of them. The Google Music service right now, as I speak, is nothing more than a digital locker for your own music. And they've been basically spamming me and anybody else using Google Music about these indie artists that have not been signed to major labels yet. And they've been providing you with the opportunity to download their music for free. And I wouldn't be surprised if Google Music, from Wednesday on, is a service with a few of the major labels, but then, you know, fluffed up in terms of numbers by all these indie artists that, you know, with all due respect to them, that nobody gives a shit about. It's gonna be sucky music. It's gonna be half of what you don't want, and a half of what is available in iTunes for the same price. I see nothing from what I know so far that's going to be compelling about this. It's going to have deep Android integration, I'm sure. But still, so what? Who gives a crap? I mean, it boggles my mind why Google is even trying to do this. They are trying far too hard to compete against Apple in areas that they really just should not be competing in. Even if they have all the music labels, even if they can do whatever the hell they want, who would choose Google over Apple for music? I mean, why? Why would you?
You know it's going to suck anyway, because let's say Google does the whole thing, has all the music studios are behind them 100%. Okay. We as users are going to get screwed, because if you're on Apple, you're fucked. They released that the Gmail app, and how long did they have that up on Apple servers? A few hours?
About an hour and a half. Yep. Yeah, Google doesn't give a shit about iOS development, so you're absolutely right. They probably would not release a Google Music application for iOS. And even if they did, I don't know if Apple would allow them to put it on the store. So yeah, we have that issue. And plus, I predict they're not gonna, they will either have only two of the big four music labels, or they might not even have any. This is all going to be like an indie repository, like a MySpace for Google, a MySpace Music for Google. And I don't get it. I don't get why they even want to do this. All right. Let's see. Well, you know what? There has been an exploit found in iOS 5 that might allow those people of a jailbreak inclination to untether their iOS 5 jailbreak, which means they'll be able to restart the phone and keep their jailbroken apps and functionality.
One step closer to iPhone Nirvana, Craig.
Yeah, you know what? I've always said I am done jailbreaking my iPhones, but I don't know if that's necessarily true, because I would love to be able to tether my iPhone for free, for very, very minimal uses. Now, if I was going to make heavy usage of tethering, I would gladly pay for it. But I'm not going to pay $20 extra a month just to transfer a few megabytes between my iPad and my iPhone at work. I'm just not going to do that. And I would love to be able to. And if I could do it for free, I'm going to do it. And some of the jailbreak applications are quite nice. I always liked IntelliScreen.
I'm using IntelliScreen X right now. It is awesome. That's right.
And we haven't hung out since they came out with that. I can't wait to see that. I want to. I've seen images of that, which basically it takes over the notification center, right?
Yes, it takes complete control over that.
But then it also gives you more options to display stuff on the lock screen, like it did before, right?
Yes, it pretty much on the lock screen. It's pretty much a notification center.
Okay.
It gives you like more stuff like in your calendar instead of like what it's like a week or two that Apple gives you. You can put like a crap load of days. It just makes it more awesome.
Yeah, I really want that. So I'm excited about that. So those of you of a jailbreak inclination, it's coming. The untethered jailbreak for iOS 5 is coming. And supposedly, it would allow for the iPhone 4S to be jailbroken as well. So any of these discussions hinge on whether or not you can jailbreak the iPhone 4S, because that's what I have now. All right. So, you know what? Talk about the iPhone 4S. You know, Consumer Reports actually likes it now. They actually say that the antenna doesn't suck anymore, which I can attest to. There is absolutely no way, without covering each and every possible surface of that phone, to put it into anything that even looks like a death grip is impossible. It's a brilliant antenna. And it proves those people that say that the basic design of the antenna of the iPhone 4 was bad. It proves them wrong. Because a lot of people became overnight experts in antenna technology and instantly had the expertise to say that you can't have an antenna on the outside of the phone. It's just not possible. Apple proved them wrong. However, Apple would have also been, you know, well served in, you know, exploring this a little bit longer and possibly not releasing the iPhone 4 when they did. Because the iPhone 4 really did have some significant issues with the antenna. So anyway, Consumer Reports now recommends the iPhone 4S, and it never did recommend the iPhone 4 in either of its CDMA or GSM variants because of the antenna. They still don't put it at the top of the list, though. They still have two Android phones ahead of it, which blows me away. I haven't seen any phone from on the Android side that is even close to being as good as the iPhone is.
Greg, I have a question.
Yeah.
It might be a stupid question.
Yeah.
How many people base their decisions on buying something from Consumer Reports?
Under the age of 25, none.
Oh, okay.
25 to 40, maybe a little bit. 40 plus...
I've never even opened it up.
Yeah. If age 40 plus, you know, a lot of people do. Especially when it comes to TVs and washing machines. They're it. I'm not being sarcastic. It's an old person publication for old people to look at stuff. Now, please, nobody get offended. If you are a young person that does look at Consumer Reports, that's fine. I'm not necessarily saying you're a bad person. I'm not saying that you are ancient or you're living in the Dark Ages, but I kind of am. Who the hell looks at Consumer Reports? I mean, it's there's no reason to. There are so many other publications. I don't know. I think that they are trying their damnedest to get into the news so that they can publicize themselves and not have to pay for it, because their readership is down like they don't want to admit. All right.
Well, we've been talking about phones for so long. I'd like to talk about Valve.
Oh, Steam God.
Hacked.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Tell me, what is Steam?
Well, Steam is like their Valve's platform where you can buy like games for them, and you can has the whole DRM thing set up, so you just buy your games and play them. And they have a large amount of games, so I even have bought one of the Prince of Persia games through Steam. Really great system, and it gets hacked.
So, the hack isn't as bad as it could have been, right? Tell us about the hack.
Well, they got usernames, hashed and salted passwords. I don't know what that means. I'm putting that out there. Game purchases, email addresses, billing addresses, and encrypted credit card information.
That's not what I saw. What I saw was a much less severe hack, that credit cards and personal info were not stolen, and usernames were stolen, and email addresses possibly, but financial information were not stolen. That's what I saw.
Well, I have an email from I don't know if it's a president or whoever it is, and it says, "Our Steam forums were defaced on the evening of Sunday, November 6th. We began investigating and found that the intrusion goes beyond the Steam forums. We learned that that intruders obtained access to a Steam database in addition to the forums. This database contained information including usernames, hash and salted passwords, game purchases, email addresses, billing addresses, and encrypted credit card information." But they don't have evidence that these were taken. But hey, they
okay. Well, I stand corrected. I didn't think it was that bad. Well, that's a pretty bad intrusion, I must say.
Thankfully, I have my credit card set up, so any purchases above $10, I can email from Chase.
Oh, so, wow. I can't do that, because I make purchases over that amount far too often. But
I do too, but hey, it's I've already caught a scumbag trying to buy like Xbox Live subscriptions through Amazon by using these emails, and I called.
Oh, that's right. Yeah. You, for the longest time, you were not able to use your credit card on Amazon. Is that fixed now?
It's the one credit card. I really don't care about it because I have the Amazon rewards card. So
as you long got as that. Doesn't get... I'm sorry. You got that Amazon card in response to that issue, right?
Yes.
Yeah. So, yeah. All right. Well, at least you don't care about it anymore.
No. I use it for very small purchases. It's just there just to keep, just for my security that I have another card that if something happened, yeah. I can buy something.
Yeah, exactly. Yep. All right. So, winding down for this episode, we do have a story about old people. We kind of referenced it with Consumer Reports that old people use that. But what old people also like to do is vote. Old people are the most reliable voters in America because they rely so heavily. Yes, unfortunately. They rely so heavily on programs, domestic programs, that they think, unreasonably so, that Republicans, by and large, would like to see them just, you know, go off and die. Which is not the case.
Republicans have the right idea, and they should be saving us youngsters from negative things of life.
Like debt. So anyway, not to get too political, because this is not our politics show, that's Mondays, citizens in Oregon, so those that are elderly or disabled, are now able to vote with their iPads. A new system was introduced to help voters who cannot fill out traditional forms, and also those people that cannot go to the voting booth. So they can, these election workers are going to be in various locations, like public parks and just on the street and sidewalks. And people can go to these places, these people, these election workers, and fill out on the iPad information to be registered to vote, and then to actually go ahead and vote. I think that's very good.
You can even use the sip and puff device that registers breaths as fingertip touches.
Yeah, I mean, it's fascinating what's going on here. It's absolutely fascinating. I think this is the future of voting. Eventually, I think we're going to be able to log on to a secure website and cast our votes from home. I see no reason why not. There are security issues, obviously, but there's always security issues. Always. And I think I like this a lot. There are a lot of people, a lot of shut-ins, a lot of people that just for mobility reasons can't get out to vote, but they would love to, and I think this is great. I really do.
Until the servers are hacked and
votes
are changed.
Well, I really do feel that this is more of a cop-out, because there's always been voter fraud, and with those ballots that were cast in paper, you know, oftentimes they would wind up somehow quote-unquote lost, and they'd be found a few months after the fact in some trash bin in a back alley. I mean, you've had, you know, votes get changed or lost ever since voting ever happened. Voter fraud is as old as voting itself. So I'm sure there's going to be issues with security. But in some ways, I wouldn't be surprised if electronic voting ended up being more secure than traditional ballot methods of voting. So this story does not bother me from a security standpoint. Do you disagree?
I disagree and agree. It's one of those things that sort of there is that issue because we've talked about Steam being hacked that, hey, shit can happen.
Yeah. And
shit with this stuff could be far worse because you'd probably be inputting things like your social security number and stuff, and yeah, that's not something you want around. Of course, I do that with, like, if once I go into my student loans, so that system has a possibility of being hacked as well, so.
Yeah, actually, everybody, to some extent or another, has to give their social security number out, their phone number out, their credit card information out, their name, their address out, in much less secure ways than what an electronic voting method would entail. I like the phenomenon of easy access to voting and electronic voting. I think it's constitutionally agreeable to me. I like it a lot. I like it a lot. You know what? I just realized that this is going to be a short episode because I think we've pretty much exhausted the topics to discuss. It's been a pretty slow week up until the point that we record. I have the feeling that the upcoming week, most of which those listening have already heard, unfortunately, will be very interesting. And to get our take on that, tune back in next Friday. All right, Chemslave, do we have anything else to talk about before we wind things down for the evening?
I don't think so.
All right, so if you, you being the audience, if you liked what we had to say, or if you disagreed with what we had to say on anything that we discussed, please email us. Our email address is feedback@justgettingbypodcast.com. I'll say that again, feedback@justgettingbypodcast.com. Visit our website, again, justgettingbypodcast.com, to see a list of all the links that we used to compile today's show. And also find ways to subscribe to us on iTunes and in your favorite podcast catcher of choice. All right, Chemslave, it's been a good week, and I look forward to talking to you again next week.
Sayonara.
See you.